Hey guys, and welcome to this week's On the Trail podcast with Jared Stansberry and Adam Gray. Stay tuned. You'll get your inside look at the current going-ons within Iowa State athletics, specifically recruiting. But before we start the show, here's a shout-out to our sponsor, The Exercise Coach, that's located down on Mill Civic Parkway in West Des Moines. The Exercise Coach, it's changing the way that you think about fitness. Achieve the results that you want, no matter what they are, with these two 20-minute workouts per week. Now, hey, let's jump on the trail. Here are your hosts, Jared Stansberry and Adam Gray.
Welcome, fanatics, to another week of On the Trail podcast. I'm Adam Gray, joined as always by Jared Stansberry. How you doing, Jared?
Good. How you doing?
Doing well. Doing well. Had a, big win against Texas Tech, and it was a perfect week to win 66-10 because Iowa State had some big-time visitors in.
Yeah, definitely. We've talked a lot about Thayer Munford, the offensive lineman from Ohio. He was here on an official visit, as well as Shannon Reed, a linebacker from Florida,
which we hadn't talked about on the trip podcast.
No, because we were obviously up at Coach Barry's office last week, so we didn't get much of a chance to talk about football last week. But yeah, Shannon Reed, Thayer Munford was here. Datron Young,
Datron?
Yeah, I was talking about this with Alex Halstead the other day. We don't know.
You don't know?
No. But I don't know. Young, Datron, whatever his name is. Defensive back from Florida. He was here as well. And then they had a couple guys that were in here on unofficials. Anthony McKinney, the kid from Iowa Western.
We talked about him 2 weeks ago.
Left
tackle, yeah.
Yeah, and then there was a kid from Arizona, but I have to look up what his name was. I can't remember.
Left tackle, Joey Ramos.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Joey Ramos, yeah. Another tackle, but he's a 2018 kid.
Yeah, both him and McKinney are 2018 kids here on unofficials.
Yeah, so obviously Thayer Munford, big-time recruit, has, Kentucky, Pittsburgh, a couple of schools that we're competing against.
Just picked up an offer from Miami yesterday.
Yeah, just picked up an offer from them, too. And
it's a weird recruitment with him.
Well, he was the one that could not play his first about 8 weeks of high school because he transferred schools and he went to a school where they thought there's maybe some tampering, but all of a sudden he's been able to play since. But I don't think there's any denying his talent.
Right.
You know? So,
well, he was here on an unofficial visit over the summer. He's huge.
He's a massive.
Yeah,
massive
he is. Yes, he is definitely very big.
So he's a 3-4 star depending where you're looking at. And same thing for Shannon Reed, 3-4 star depending where you're looking, correct. I would say – I always kind of like to think about who is the one I prefer more than the other. Obviously, you take both. I still say Iowa State's offensive line is what needs to be the first priority.
Yeah.
But I've always said all year long that we need an upgrade in linebackers big time. So the fact that we could get a Shannon Reed on a kid that's got offers from Michigan and Tennessee, that's big time for this coaching staff.
Well, and Thayer Munford becomes even bigger when you consider the fact that Tyler Yost, the offensive lineman from Libertyville, decommitted late last week.
Yeah, we need to talk about that.
Yeah.
So what do you think about that? Basically, he came out on Twitter and said that the reason he decommitted is because the coaching staff asked him to gray shirt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he would have came in January of 2018 rather than in the summer of 2017.
Okay, let me hear your thoughts on that.
I honestly think that it was the right thing to do.
Okay.
Because I'd say
From the coaching staff perspective.
And for the kid, obviously it sucks right now, you know? But if the coaches were in a position where they'd graded someone else on the board higher, or because obviously they obviously don't think he's probably the best guy in their class right now if they're asking him to gray shirt, you know. So if they're going to do that and they're going to ask you to gray shirt, I'd rather they do it now in the end of November rather than do it in the end of January, and then you have nothing, you can't do anything, you know, because you haven't had any chance to talk to any other schools or anything like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's no good way for the coaching staff.
No, there's no good way to go about it, but if you're going to go about it, I would say the earlier the better.
So my take on it is this, and I agree with you, the earlier is the better. The bad part is if you don't get any of the other recruits you're looking for, right?
True.
I mean, they told him they wanted to get some junior college players to come in here to help bolster the line right away from next year. That's great as long as you get those kids. If you don't and you lost Jost because of it, that's kind of a shame. At the same time, I know that there are some people up at Iowa State that thought Paul Rhodes should have done this with a couple kids in their offensive line classes in the years past, and he hung on to these kids even though after maybe they played their senior year, they realized maybe these kids aren't Big 12 ready, Big 12 players. And now you sit here, we are where we are, where there's no depth for a couple-year class – because Paul Rhodes didn't maybe cut these guys loose and then go after other kids. So this is a Big 12, right? I mean, I'm Dan Hawkins. This is Division I football. This is Big 12. This ain't Intermules. I mean, he's right. It doesn't look good. It's not a good look. But at the same time, if Iowa State wants to get to the point where all Iowa State fans want them to be, sometimes you got to look a little ugly to get there.
Right.
And I mean you'd hope it's not the case, but sometimes you got to be a little. You got to do a little.
And you have to remember that the only people we can. The only person we can hear from on this situation is the kid.
Yep.
So we're only going to be able to hear it from his side of the story.
Correct.
And I'm not saying that I'm not saying there is two sides of the story. I'm just saying that at the end of the day, the only perspective we're getting is his.
Yeah.
So it's like. I mean, yeah, I feel bad for the kid because it sucks that, you know, you get the place that you think you want to go and you think that, and you've been in the class since April, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, you know, maybe it's not going to work. Maybe they don't want me as bad as it seemed like they did before, but you still have plenty of time now. There's 4 months almost until signing day. There's still plenty of time, especially if he had other coaches that were getting after him in the months since April, he'll have plenty of time to find somewhere else to go.
Yeah, no, I agree. And hopefully it works out for Tyler and he lands at a good school and makes Iowa State pay for it, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But then hopefully also Iowa State's able to get some JUCO guys and, you know.
Like DeMarcus Hayes.
And it all pays off in the end of the day, you know.
Yeah. Because, I mean, it really is amazing what this Iowa State coaching staff has done with an offensive line that's made up of two walk-ons, a redshirt freshman. I mean, we can rehash it a million times. People know what our offensive line looks at. And we just ran for – what, 7 touchdowns last game? Scored 66 points. Granted, it was against Texas Tech, but that's still really impressive with the offensive line.
That was a question I forgot to ask Jeff Woody on CFTV Live, was whether or not any of that success was just because they're playing against Texas Tech, or if it's things that'll actually translate over to against other teams.
Well, I mean, I think it has to translate to a little. I mean, not only did we do it against Texas Tech, but we've done it against other teams. Maybe not as consistent. Well, definitely not as consistent, but we have done it against other teams. So I think it will translate, and we're doing it, like I said, with an undermanned, no-depth offensive line. It makes you excited for the future. The problem with the offensive line is it usually takes a while.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Thayer Munford's a big recruit too, and you know, between him and Caleb Chandler, who Iowa State's still going after,
right.
I'd gladly take either one of them. Both would be ideal, but just one of them would be huge. And then if we could get a big-time linebacker to go with Orion Vance and Jake Hummel, I think Iowa State is in the process of getting back and filling all the holes that they have right now and being really competitive here in the next couple of years.
Definitely. And I mean, you can see that there's a concerted effort being made to fill those holes that you look at.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's not like they're just blindly like trying to get guys.
Sure.
No, they're definitely targeting guys at the positions that they're like, they look at their team and it's like, we got to fix this spot, you know. You can see that they're doing that.
Speaking of like filling holes, like seeing something that is messing up and filling holes, we got Kirk Holland here, Encyclopedia.
Am I the hole or am I the filler?
I think coaches in today's world look at analytics a lot more than they ever used to, right? They look at it and say, hey, maybe this is an area we did not see that we had issues in, but the analytics kind of show us that, and how can we make changes? How do you look at that? As you're obviously not a coach, but you follow analytics more than any person I know.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to say because I don't know how much any coaches actually do use, or I was talking to some guys about it this past weekend. I mean, when does it turn from stats to analytics? I mean, does it depend on how much math you have to do, or like, I don't know what the qualifier is, and football coaches, I don't know what they consider kind of completely taboo, and basketball coaches, I don't know how far the normal guy would take it, and it's really hard for me to assess that without knowing. You know, I don't get to bump elbows with the coaches all the time like you guys do.
Well, you need to go up with Jared then. Jared will get you in touch, and you can ask them all the questions and learn.
I heard a comment on the post game show on the way home on Sunday, and one of the players said, "Such and such coach is really into analytics, and I was pissed off because I didn't hear which name it was." I just always assume it's Neil Barry because he looks like Brad Stevens, and you know.
Speaking of Neil Barry, so we had the podcast with him last week. Did you listen to it?
Yeah, yeah.
You like it?
Yeah, it was really good.
I appreciate it. I figured.
Well,
you
I figured two-thirds of it was really good.
Yeah, funny. I figured you liked it because you know we've been doing this podcast for it was 17, 18 episodes now.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until after we got Neil Barry on that Kirk says these guys might actually be legit. I need to reach out to them and try to be on the podcast. You notice how that happened?
Well, actually, the chain of events is backwards here because we were just talking about you guys do a recruiting podcast. My interest in recruiting is like slightly more than zero on more than like a cursory level. I mean, I'll take note of who recruits or who commits, especially with football. Football is like, out there. Basketball I'll pay a little more attention to.
There's
not as many kids, and one guy is a bigger deal.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'll fall a little bit. I just don't get into it and analyze their highlight mixtapes and all that crap.
So would you say you're a bigger basketball fan, Iowa State basketball fan, than football?
No, I'd say I'm about the same. I think I feel more confident in my basketball knowledge than my football knowledge.
I think that's how a lot of people are around here.
Well, to be fair, Iowa State basketball has been better.
And I think that's why.
To where I think people, yeah.
But I think even in, like, just with basketball in general, I feel like there's more people around here that have like that feel like they have a better idea of like general basketball than they do general football.
Yeah, well, I mean, all my football is like self-taught and PlayStation learned. I mean, I didn't play in high school, but I mean, I grew up playing basketball. I coached basketball after I was out of high school when I was in college. I still coach tiny kids, which doesn't really count, but...
Kirk, you need... This man won't let me be his offensive coordinator for his son's basketball team. I don't get it. I don't get why.
Well, that's because basketball teams don't have offensive and defensive coordinators.
We would be the highest scoring team in the league if I was the coach.
So at 18 points a game.
Yeah, so those little kids
leagues.
We'd
get 20. We'd be the first to ever break 20.
Say, theoretically, that he brought you in and you were running like the Dave Arsenault, Grinnell offense and you were just setting records. People would think Adam was a gigantic douchebag for doing that with little kids. And they would think you were like some hyper-competitive like asshole, and it would be a problem. So Adam's making a good decision, not to say you wouldn't be very good at your job.
Because people already think I'm a gigantic douchebag. I don't need any extra reasons for them to think this. Yeah.
I mean, That's not what I would do.
Medium.
I would come in and I would bring winning. That's what I would bring.
See, but that's the problem. Like, I don't know if you like this little kid basketball stuff. It's like fundamentals.
It's all
fun.
About kids having fun.
Participation. If it was like seventh or eighth grade, then I'd be all for it. But
even then, I won't hire you. You'd be a step down for me as coaching skills.
This is why Johnston never wins any state titles.
Actually, we did. We won 58 straight games, one of the all-time records. But keep talking.
When?
95, 96. 94, 95. I'm sorry. Yeah. But anyway.
You guys actually crushed Nevada back in those days.
That was 20 years ago.
Yeah, we did.
That
was back in the Chris Danner, Matt Sunblad days.
Yeah, it was 20 years ago.
Sunblad. That son
of... Yeah, I went to Lamar. Ryan Gray coming off the bench. Never missed a shot in the NCAA tournament. Just ask him. He'll remind you. But yeah.
Hey, I never missed a shot in the NCAA tournament either. That's weird.
Or not NCAA tournament. NCAA tournament.
Hey, same.
So, Kirk, you're obviously a big RPI fan. So we brought you in here to talk about the RPI.
No. RPI?
Yeah, you love the RPI. You think Ken Pom's a joke?
No.
On Saturday, I bought my first ever Ken Pom subscription.
Jared, it's been like going on for 3 years, and you only just now could find the $20 in your couch cushions to spring. For
well, I just now got my first real job.
Yeah, I guess.
Kurt, as much as I make fun of Ken Pom, and rightfully so for some reason.
It depends on your perspective and what you want to use it for.
I've had a subscription every year.
Yeah, well, and I don't know. Like, people don't like the rankings or something. Like, no, I don't really care so much about the rankings. I don't depend on the rankings to be, like, within the 1% error of whatever is deemed to be the best ranking system. I think it's more just the database, and it at least gives you a ballpark. I mean, if you're going to play Savannah State on a Friday night, you're like, wow, is Savannah State like middle of the pack, or are they the worst team in the country? And it turns out they're closest to the worst team in the country.
Or if it's Citadel, you can look at it and say, oh, their coaches had the worst defense in the nation for like 10 years in a row.
The fastest pace and worst defense.
Yeah,
yes.
They're probably not going to play any defense. And then you know what? They didn't play any defense.
No, they did. That was a fun game, though. That was a fun game. So when you look at analytics, the way you look at them, what does this team need to improve? And they went to Sweet 16 last year. They had a lot of success, but they come back. They bring a lot of guys back. George is a gone, McKay, Nader, but they still bring a lot of guys back. What do they need to improve on to be better than they were Big 12 NCAA tournament?
Well, I think it's the obvious. It's the defense and rebounding. And I've had some discussions on Twitter with some writers about stuff with this, with everyone. You know, Monte Morris is getting picked to be an All-American, and it's, oh, someone's got to replace George Jing, so he's going to score more. I really don't think Monte's going to score a whole lot more. I mean, I'm thinking like
2 points a game?
Yeah, two or three more points a game. He might get a couple more shots.
Yeah.
What he needs to replace, in my opinion, from George Jing is he needs to take up all those assists.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to create more shots because he didn't have the ball in his hands near as much as a normal point guard would have the last 3 years, or 2 years anyway. So, I mean, defense and rebounding, defense to me, like, and it always comes back to the rim protector thing, which, I mean, it matters, but I mean, if you ask most people, they realize that you don't just protect the rim. You need to wall off the rim so people can't get there in the first place. And that's what the little guys can still do. You don't need to have a Jameel McKay or any other huge guy.
You just need a guy that's capable of making people think when they get into the lane.
I mean, yeah, that helps, but I still think you could have 5'6", or you could have 6'6", dude, be your tallest dude, and if everyone is good at staying in the gaps and preventing penetration and you don't give up the lanes and cuts to the rim, you don't need a rim protector as badly.
I think Larry Stacey's teams with, like, Marcus Fizer are a pretty good example of that.
Right.
You know, Fizer and Stevie Johnson were down low a lot of the times, and that they were defensively locked in a lot of the time.
And the funny thing about it, like, you can tell, like, last year, George was – well, Jameel too, but a lot of times they're playing without Jameel. Your 6'8 guy, I mean, he's, like, 3 inches taller than Matt Thomas. Like,
yeah.
Like, how much of a difference does it really make? And by the time you factor in vertical leaps, Matt's probably got George anyway. I mean, I don't know. Defense is obviously the one that they can stand to improve, and I think they have the players to do it, and rebounding is just going to be a major – I think the one thing I've liked so far this year is you've seen the guards get on the rebounding because the big guys are going to be so focused on, in my opinion, not getting rebounds, just keeping their guy from getting the rebound and let the guards kind of swoop in.
Well, I think the biggest difference when you look at this team defensively – it's just the activity level seems to be so much different. And that,
absolutely.
And that's like, even if they're playing the Citadel, even if they're playing Savannah State, in the past, you didn't see guys look like they were actively like, oh, we're like being trying to play defense. We really want to stop this team. It's like, we just want to get the ball back so we can go down and score.
Right. Yeah. No, I told you guys, I was sitting in the front row behind the one hoop on Sunday because compliments of Little Clone Club tickets. And so the half we were on was the defensive half for Iowa State in the first half. And they were active. They were talking. They were moving. There was a lot of good things. Now, I mean, that game was over about 30 seconds into it.
Mm-hmm. The second Iowa State scored, it was over.
So what you want to see now is when they play a team that can hang around for longer than a minute and a half.
Yeah.
If they can sustain that throughout a whole half or a whole game. And I think that's where you'll really kind of find out if the defense is much better.
I just think it's incredibly valuable in today's college basketball when you have five guys on the floor that can guard every position. Because they can switch with almost everybody. Daryl Bowie can guard your two.
Right. I
mean, he might not do it very effectively, but he can do it long enough to be able to at least contest a shot.
Yeah, I mean, if you can stay in front of a guy for more than a couple dribbles, generally you'll be fine.
And let's be honest, he can do it as good as Matt Thomas can. I know a lot of people like to think Matt Thomas, he got a lot better in defense last year, but he's not some lockdown defender. Daryl Bowie can do what Matt Thomas
and
does.
Here's what I think is the difference.
Matt was never out of this world. He was just kind of the best that we had.
Well, he was better than we'd seen before, and we were so excited that he made this huge jump.
And
rightfully
he was bad before.
He was really bad before.
So it's like, if you go from being bad to being pretty good, then that's obviously a huge jump. It's obviously noticeable.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's just like if George had gone from being what he was defensively, which I think we can all admit was essentially like a revolving door.
I don't like picking on George because the one thing about him is I think he tried really hard and he was as smart as he could be about it. He was just limited. I mean, when you're – and especially after he lost all that weight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, people want to say he lost weight and he got stronger. Well, maybe true, but you still lost mass that makes you harder to – that makes
still
you easier
to
move.
Still easier to push 220 than 250.
Exactly. And, I mean, he always put the effort in, but some guys are good at it, some guys aren't.
George,
you can still see it in the NBA. Like, there's times where it's like he just can't do it. I mean, even if you want to, even if you know schematically what you're supposed to be doing, some guys just don't have that ability to be a good defensive player.
Yeah. Well, and for George, one of the big problems, not only from the ability standpoint, was he knew he couldn't be in foul trouble. If he was in foul trouble, we were screwed.
That's a huge difference for this year, too. And the one thing I do like about the makeup of the team this year defensively, with having all the small guys and the talk of using a three-quarter court type press trap, is we have depth where we can trot some guys out there. We're kind of shallow with the bigs. And the thing I always think about is my high school coach always told me that Lauren Meyer, the team he grew up playing on in Ruthven, he was obviously really good. He came to Iowa State, was amazing. But their guards were complete junk in high school, so teams would just press the crap out of them. They never get the ball down the court, and he was basically mitigated by tiny schools.
Mm-hmm.
basically, Iowa State's not going to – I mean, it's not going to be to that extreme, but that's what we can try and do when teams have big guys. Like, I was looking at it today. Like, if they end up matched up with Gonzaga and you get Carnoustie, we don't have anyone that can guard Carnoustie. The closest one is probably Burton just because he's gigantic width-wise.
You don't think Mara Holden can slow him down a little bit?
I don't know. Mara Holden's listed at 215 and Carnoustie's listed at 300.
It's tough.
Yeah, I mean,
Holden also, you talk about the foul trouble thing.
Yeah, him and Solomon Young are seeing who can get the most fouls in the fewest minutes.
What are they averaging right now? Like a foul every 2 minutes?
Well, he averaged more than 5 fouls per game last season, per 40 minutes.
Oh, yeah, I totally believe
it. Oh, per 40 minutes. Yeah.
But still, I mean, he averaged like 5.5 fouls per game per 40 minutes.
Hey, use them, man. That's what they're there for.
You can't take them home with you.
Yeah, use them.
No, and something like Gonzaga, I mean, the thing about that is you throw Burton down in Carnoustie and you say, fine, you try and guard us now and see what happens. So
it's almost like what Iowa State would have faced if they had played Purdue last year and Purdue had the 2 big 7-footers. What would they have done against those 7-footers?
Yeah, it would have – I mean
– a little bit different.
Last year's team would have done different things.
Sure.
But yeah, I think it's a similar problem.
I mean, the thing that Iowa State always has as a benefit on that end is, yeah, like you said, it – sure, Iowa State has to guard you on one end, but you have to come back down and guard Iowa State on the other.
Yeah, and that's a total advantage to try and – because it's a whole picture the other team has to match up with. And the last few years, Iowa State's been good at getting shots.
Well, and I think – I mean, especially when you look at it from like a KenPom numbers angle, Iowa State's kind of limited with how high they can even get in those rankings just because of the style of play they play to an extent too, aren't they?
Not necessarily. They've been limited in the past few years because their defense hasn't stopped. They've given up too many points. The one thing that's kind of wonky with the numbers, I think, and there's intricacies there that I don't think we see completely, is that if Iowa State's up on Savannah State by 30 with 3 minutes left, you put all your subs in and they chop it to 15, then that affects their rankings. And I anecdotally, over the past few years, it seemed like there's a lot of times when Iowa State would have like a 20-point lead, and then in the last 5 minutes it would go down to 10 or 8, although the game was never really in question.
Mm-hmm.
I think stuff like that seems like it's hurt Iowa State, though I'm sure it's happened to other teams too. I just don't see it as often.
Kind of getting back to Monte Morris, you talked a little bit about he's going to have the ball in his hands a lot more this year without George kind of facilitating stuff. Do you foresee his turnover to assist ratio taking a kind of a hit because he is asked to be a little bit more aggressive and do more with the ball in his hands? So far, we haven't seen it, but they've also played nobody.
I'm putting zero stock in basically
the first three games.
How I look at the first three games as far as individual statistics isn't how good each player does. It's kind of the percentage of the team, like who's taking the most shots, who's getting the minutes, who's taking the threes, stuff like that. I don't know that his ratio will be hurt because if his turnovers go up, his assists may go up as well. I would suspect his turnovers will go up a little bit, but there's the other side too, where how is Donovan Jackson going to come along? Is he ever going to come in and be the primary ball handler, and Monte will go kind of to a role he was in his freshman year and play off the ball a little bit?
I
thought Donovan Jackson was going to be playing more by early on than he has been, which I don't know that he should be necessarily, but that was just my expectation.
Sure.
I blame Williams for hyping him up.
Williams has never done that before. I think it's tough for, you know, Donovan Jackson because, he's probably a little rusty coming off the not playing last year with the wrist injury. But, I mean, Nick Babb is another guy that you bring in for Thomas or Long, who's played phenomenal, in my opinion. I think he's got a bright future. And then Monte's going to stay in the court a lot, right?
Yeah.
So Donovan Jackson's role is going to be a lot more limited than we thought because I don't think anybody expected Babb to be as good as he's been.
No, I certainly didn't. And then they talked earlier in the year about limiting Monte's numbers a little bit. I mean, if it's a tight game, he's playing 36 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just no way around it. You can't take him off the court. And when you do take him off the court, you notice it almost immediately, and it's just hard to cover up. But
I think Donovan's going to play more. I mean, his shot's just not falling right now.
No, it's
and that's one of the big things that's going to keep him on the floor, you know?
He's going to have to get used to the fact that he's not a starter. Like, he's going to be playing maybe 10, 15, 20 minutes a game, depending on the game, and just that Tyrus or McGee role, so to speak. Because if he does come in, I don't see why. I know he's short. He's only 5'10", 5'11". He's not a very big guy. But he could still be a shooting guard because he is supposed to be a very good shooter.
Yeah, and I think he's just got to find his role. I mean, that's actually the second game I think I noticed it the most where he was kind of forcing things. The second real game, not kind of exhibition game. I thought Sunday he did a really good job of picking his spots. The 1-3 that he made, I mean, He was an offensive rebound, I think, and he stepped into it and it was just perfect to shoot it. And it's just going to take some time and work out all those little kinks with the lineups. But he was just one early on I expected to play a little more. But, yeah, Nick Babb, man, from when he committed and everyone was kind of acting like it was a throwaway commitment, he's only committed because of his brother. And then because his time at Arkansas, he didn't really do much. But he's impressed the hell out of me so far.
He's a great athlete.
Yeah, and the interesting thing with him, I think, is between him and Bowie is how those guys will complement each other, because Bowie's a little bit bigger, but they're kind of the same guy. Mm-hmm. And when they're out there on the together, and then if you have like a Holden or Burton in there, it's kind of weird because you're down to like a shooter or two, which mm-hmm. isn't really normal for us. So
I feel like Babb can shoot. I just don't know how much they're going to ask him to.
Yeah, and he's only taken one so far.
One three?
Yeah, he's only taken 1 3 in the first three games, which is fine. I mean, last game, Naz was 2 of 7 on Sunday, but they were crowding him so much to the line. How many cuts to the hoop did he get for layups and dunks? Yeah. And it was
backdoor all day. Yeah.
So if there's no need for two of the first three games, especially, there's been no need to really settle for 3-point jumpers unless your name is Matt or Naz.
Yeah. So for Naz, he's still only shooting like 20-something%.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how that goes, because over the history of his career here, he's always been like 5 or 8 game spurts of good and bad. And mm-hmm. We know he can make them, and we know his hip looks good because we're watching him.
He threw down an alley-oop dunk. That was surprising. Did anyone see that coming? I didn't see an alley-oop dunk coming from Naz.
No, I didn't see that.
But I mean, it was a Citadel. I think you could have caught an alley-oop dunk against a Citadel.
On a 7-foot hoop, maybe. Yeah.
Turns out the defense cannot make me jump higher.
Yeah. I absolutely would not have dunked that. No, I was impressed. But it made me – Naz, despite his bad shot, has looked better than I thought he would look at this point in the year. I thought he'd look a little more rusty. His shot, I mean, like you said, it's always going to be – it's going to come and go.
Yeah.
His jump shot, to me, form-wise, looks completely different from jump shot to jump shot more than any shooter I can remember.
That's what I was just going to say. I don't know if there's anybody on that team that's more inconsistent with what his shot actually looks like
than Naz. Just noticed it on Sunday, too. There's a couple he took with his feet where, like, right foot was, like, a foot in front of the left foot. His shot this year, I swear it's just this year, I think it's what you're about to say, Jared, looks so flat.
When he gets it up and he keeps his hand high, then he makes it almost every time. But he has too many times where he'll shoot and he'll kind of gator arm it.
He short arms it.
Yeah, he'll drop his hand.
He does that and he snaps the wrist back. Yes. Yep. And that's when it's like – and I mean, we're no shot doctors here.
Right.
But
speak for yourself.
Well, what kind of shot are we talking about?
20%.
I meant more proof.
But yeah, you can just see those moments when – he'll shoot one, and if he drops his hands down real quick, it's like, that's not going in.
Right.
You know, but if he keeps his hands high and he really holds his form, it always looks good. It looks like it's going to go in.
Yeah, and I thought it was good on Sunday. I mean, early, Matt made, what, his first 4?
Yeah.
It was good to get him going because he had been struggling. And
he never shot again, did he? Did he shoot?
He went 4 or 5.
So he shot one more, okay.
Yeah, and I mean, the first 2 games, Monte, Naz, and Donovan were like – terrible.
Yeah.
Monte, Matt, Naz, and Donovan. Monte is 5 of 10 right now.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that'll keep up.
Probably improve.
Yeah. For sure.
The one that like really stuck out the most to me about Matt, like just how much more confidence he has. There was one time he caught it in the corner and he just like took one dribble right at the defender and then just squared his feet again and then shot. And it was like, damn, okay. He knows he's feeling it when he's just like, he's like, I'm going to take one dribble right at you and then just pull it up.
Like, and I still think it's like, I think it's his comfort thing, but I wish he would not dribble sometimes. I wish he'd be more of a catch and shoot. Sometimes he catches, pumps, dribbles, steps in, then the step back, which I think is just like his comfort move.
Well, he gets into a shooting pocket.
Yeah.
That's what he does. I would
like every once in a while. It's because I don't know how many times over the few years when Matt's been, he's caught a 3-point line. He pump fakes, and then the shot he ends up taking was way worse than the one he originally had. But, I mean, he shot like over 40% last year, so what the hell am I talking about?
We need to go back. There's probably no way of knowing this. I bet Iowa State keeps track of it, though. His percentage of 3-pointers made off the dribble versus off the – I bet his off the dribble is 10% higher.
I don't know. Just thinking back on the spot, it sort of seems like that didn't really come around until like last season.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know. No comment.
I wish college basketball had sports view like the NBA does, where you can look at all those kinds of things.
Yeah, off the dribble stuff.
Yeah, and, or like shot charts. Like you can look at a guy's shot chart and
you
see where it is.
You can get shot charts from some places.
Okay.
It depends on where you go look at depends on the website and how they do their game cast and if where the game is being played supports it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's really hard to get it by player.
Why does an encyclopedia do that?
Because I have a real job. I mean, if you're paying me, then we can talk about it. But
let's talk after off the record.
Yeah, but the other thing I was gonna mention earlier too is I was a little worried about Deontay Burton a little bit earlier in the year, but on Sunday, him and Donovan both I think did a really good job of picking spots. Like, I'm hoping Burton doesn't get frustrated by his lack of scoring output so far this year, but I think he's always this kind of a guy that it'll depend on matchups and what's working. And
I feel like if he can get 10 points and just like 8 rebounds, he'll make an impact on every game.
Just the 8 rebounds alone would be a huge impact. I think he's just the one guy that is the one guy that can always go get his own shot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sometimes it's going to end up being a terrible shot, but based on matchups, I think he can usually do that. So when things aren't going well, if you can get him the ball to get a look. Last year, I think we learned that his ceiling is always just going to be dependent on the decisions he makes.
Yeah.
When he plays under control and makes good decisions, he's really, really good. And when he doesn't, he looks like crazy. So you haven't even told me the KenPom sucks very much yet, Adam.
I like KenPom for checking out tempo, checking out a lot of stats. I hate rankings at KenPom.
Well, you don't like the win-loss thing.
No, the win-loss thing, to me, it's irrelevant, stupid too, but I hate it whenever anyone uses Iowa State plays number 11 team from according to KenPom tonight, and I don't know. I just would never use KenPom as far as rankings of teams.
What would you use?
Zagarin, however you say it.
Oh, I don't know that that's really all that different, to be honest. I think his just is more of a hybrid model where I think part of it uses the same type of angle as KenPom, and the other part uses more of a win-loss
anymore,
RPI-ish.
I like to use all of them and kind of just mold them together. And let's be honest, a lot of it is too. If you watch a decent amount of basketball, there's sometimes you look at a team and be like, I know that they're telling me that that's the 12th best team in the country. I'm not seeing it. I don't know. I just don't like it when all of a sudden it seems like this KenPom has been this phenomenon where everyone uses it for what teams are ranked anymore. I don't buy that, but that's just me.
Yeah, like I was saying, I think it's more of a ballpark thing. But the other thing is too, like, 2 weeks into the year, I don't care at all.
No.
I mean,
it's better than RPI right now. I think Charlotte's number one right now in RPI.
I mean, I don't think Pomeroy's preseason rank, I don't think the preseason portion of his formula gets completely nixed from this season until like late January.
Yeah.
It gradually gets less and less and less, and it takes that long to actually get rid of it. So.
Well, that's why even football, I mean, they don't put out any of their final ratings or whatever the BCS thing is until what, week 8? I mean, as far as what the committee does, the committee waits 7-8 weeks.
They shouldn't even do it until it's time to announce.
Yeah, I don't know.
Could you imagine if they did it after week 1? Right, it'd be irrelevant.
Right.
And so it's smart for people when they're looking at RPI or KenPom, not even to look at it, like you said, till at the end of January,
because
until then it's pretty much pointless. I mean, you're seeing Elon, I think, is a top 10 team according to RPI right now. Sorry, Elon's not a top 10.
Well, the formula is just dumb in the first place. But like as far as football, I think most like advanced ratings for football is usually solely on the current season after like week 6 or so.
6, okay.
One that I happen to know of is right around week 5.
Is that CF? What? How do you say that again?
It rhymes with CFB analytics, yeah. something like that.
You know, I do enjoy, I've been known to place a bet or two every now and then. I do enjoy getting on your site and seeing if any of what I think might be a wrong line matches up with what you guys say.
Right.
And yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. Maybe the next couple of weeks or might be after the season, we're going to go back and look how we did against the spread. I know straight up right now we're like around 72%, which
yeah, straight up
I think is okay. I don't really have any context for it.
What are you at in the Cyclone Fanatic picks?
Not very good, but
neither
my point to Williams the other day was that's like from a hand selection of like 6 games. I mean, we're picking every single game every single week. So he's just picking the wrong 6 games, probably.
That's what I keep telling too, because on the forecast I'm on fire, and then when you go and look at the CF picks, I'm terrible.
Well, in the forecast thing, you go pick whatever
game
you want.
I want.
Yeah,
a lot easier when you can pick whatever game
exactly,
you want.
Exactly. Yeah.
A lot easier.
So, back to basketball. You guys pumped for the tournament this weekend?
Yeah. So this is there a little pressure on the team this weekend? As far as, I mean, if they lose, or there's a chance they fall out of the top 25.
Oh, I bet they don't really care about that, do they?
I can't imagine they do. I think it would be more of like a
I bet they do. I bet they care about it.
I bet they care about it. I bet they're not thinking.
I bet they're not thinking they're about probably it. Not oh, thinking. We can't lose. Like, oh, if we lose, we'll drop out.
Yeah, they're thinking if we lose, that'll suck. We lost to the Sycamores.
Sure. Well, I don't think.
They're not losing that one, though.
Yeah, they're not going to lose that one. But, I mean, the game I'm worried about more is Miami, because Jim Larranaga's teams are always tough.
Yeah.
And traditionally, Iowa State physical teams give Iowa State problems.
Right.
So that game scares me. Even, I mean, Gonzaga, I don't know. We'll see when we get there.
I think Gonzaga would be just a ton of fun to watch.
I do, too.
I had the thought the other day, you know, I was telling Jared about our crappy home schedule for non-conference games, and I had the thought, you know, it kind of sucks you see your first real competition away from home where you're comfortable, but at the same time, the guys we have on the roster that have been through, like, Monte, Matt, and Nez have played hundreds and hundreds of minutes at Fog Island Fieldhouse, at Oklahoma, at, I mean, all sorts of places. Like
Oklahoma State,
even though
Cincinnati,
they've kind of Kansas State,
BYU,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and this kind of also goes back in this kind of side topic.
Do they have to go to Michigan at some point?
They did in the Royce White year.
Went. Okay.
They played Michigan.
They played
Thomas's freshman year, Matt and Monte's freshman year.
Yeah, no, that was when they played at.
Was it their sophomore
year? Iowa State, yeah.
In Monte's freshman year, we played Michigan at home.
That helped me.
And in the Royce year, we played at Michigan. It was the same day as the football game at Kansas State. I know because I was tailgating down there and lightning and whatnot.
How did we do in that game?
Yeah, lost by a touchdown.
Yeah.
Which one?
Kansas State football, 2011.
Oh.
My mind goes through this. Last year before one of the tournament games, Jeff Goodman was leeching around with George Niang before the game, and they're like on the bus ride over there, and he's just interviewing George and talking to him, shooting the shit. I'm not supposed to cuss, am I? Sorry.
He dropped an F-bomb on the last podcast.
And
wait, what'd you say?
Shooting the S.
Oh, no,
you weren't
good.
Even listening with that.
You're good.
And Goodman's asking George, hey, are you nervous? And George's like, no, not really. Like, the whole morning, like before the NCAA tournament game, I'm like sick to my stomach. The entire game, like, I can't function. Like, I'm pacing, I can't move, like, no lead is safe. And then they can just, like, they're, like, totally just fine. They've been doing this all their lives.
Yep.
And I'm the exact opposite. So, like, going for these guys to play their first competition, real competition, away from Hilton, probably isn't really a big deal.
I think Iowa State fans are probably a little bit more worried about last year just because of what happened the year before at UAB.
Yeah. You know, I mean, and there's truth to that, too.
Yeah. But, no, I get that. There are certain games where I feel like – I tell my wife this all the time we're watching. As nervous as we are for, like, Monte shooting a free throw here in the clutch, I guarantee you he's not nearly as nervous as we are.
Yeah, and there's I went through this too when I was coaching and that was right after I was done playing in high school, and I wasn't, like, as good as Jared or anything, but
– he's not that good. Trust me.
I know. He must be unaware about that. But, like, when you play, like, you don't really – like, once you're into the game, you're not really nervous anymore. Like, a few minutes in, when you coach, like, the entire time, you're – because you have, like, zero control over what, like, directly happens. And as a fan, you have even less control. And
– to this day, I get nervous when I play, like, for the first point of, like, a pickup game.
Well, that's just stupid. That's
no, I'm just saying it's just because, like, I just – like, I get juiced up to play basketball. So it's not, like, nervous as much as it is, like
– I always tell my son
it's
that.
Just like –
you're just excited.
Yeah, like, I just get
– anxious.
I get ready to play, you know. And so, like, that's – it's just, like, you get a feeling in your stomach, like, oh, I'm ready to play some basketball. But then, like, this first time – the first point's done and it goes away, you know. Right. It's just, oh, we're just playing now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when you're nervous and you got butterflies, it just means you care.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's what it means. So, yeah, I mean
– and I don't like to lose, so –
so Iowa State goes down. We all agree they're going to beat Indiana State.
Yeah.
And then Miami – Stanford's actually, I think, better than people think. They're a decent squad this year.
I haven't caught any of Stanford.
It's scary because they might come up against an old friend, Jared Haas.
Yeah.
He's the coach there now.
Yeah, that's
– okay.
Yeah. Old friend seems
– I'm just saying. Okay,
accurate.
Not old friend. Old nemesis maybe would be a little bit more accurate, but –
yeah, I don't know what
Adam's all of a sudden got like bitter beer face.
Well, that was a bad day, and I don't know why you're bringing it up.
Yeah, I don't know why you had to bring that up either.
Well, I mean, it's either I bring it up right now or it comes up on Friday.
Yeah.
We get to Friday, and it's like, oh, crap, Jared Haas is the coach at Stanford.
So Stanford has – they're 4-0. They beat Colorado State, Weber State, Cal State Northridge all at home, and they beat Harvard over in China. And
in China?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was like that first game of the season was in China. Oh. Last year, I think they played Texas over there and really? Smoked them.
So they're, according to KenPom, they're 6-point underdogs to Miami. Miami's the 17th best team. They're the 65th best team. But I mean, 65th best team still early on. I mean, they're a solid team. Right?
Yeah. I mean, we just don't know yet. To be honest. I mean, we don't know enough about anything right now to be able to really.
They have the Reed Travis from Minnesota, who Iowa State recruited for a while. He's a nice player. But yeah, I mean, I personally think we'll play Miami.
I think that's more than likely. Yeah.
And they'll probably play Gonzaga. But Miami to me is the game more so even than Gonzaga that scares me, just because of the way that they typically play, more physical, and how is Iowa State going to handle it? Are their bigs going to get in foul trouble? We've seen Young and Holden foul quite a bit.
Yeah, well, at least the good news with that is at least we have two guys that we can trot out there. Then that's not even counting Bowie. And even by then, like if you're completely strapped for players, you can throw Simeon Carter out there to get in the way.
Oh, yeah, back from the suspension.
Simeon Carter. But
if Simeon Carter's in, I mean, no offense to Simeon, we're probably hurt.
We're probably in trouble, but yeah. I mean, we haven't really seen much this year either where we've gone uber small.
Even with Miami, though, I mean, I'm looking at their roster right now. There's hardly anybody on that team that, like, scares me. Like, even looking at their numbers.
Jim Larranaga, dude.
And I can't believe how well he's done down there. I mean, when they hired him, it's like, it doesn't seem like this old guy fits down there. But he's just been awesome.
He's great. Who's the other team? Who would Gonzaga play in the second round?
Is it Temple, maybe?
I honestly don't even know.
I was looking at the other side of the bracket last week.
I mean, Miami in their first three games, they played Western Carolina, killed them. North Florida killed them. And then they beat Penn by 12.
Yeah, they're not exactly like a huge team. But yeah, like to Adam's point, though, if they play that a tough physical brand, then it might hurt us a little bit, but the way games are being called right now this season.
Seton Hall in Florida.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Seton Hall in Florida play, yeah. I think they play on Thursday, and then the winner of that plays Gonzaga. Sorry, go ahead. But, no, the same reason I'll be afraid when we play Cincinnati. Same exact reason, just because Cincinnati typically
turns it into a rock fight.
Yeah, it's why we lose to West Virginia, even though I think we're a better team than West Virginia last year. Mm-hmm. They just muddy the game up. They beat on you, they beat on you, they beat on you. And you got to be a really mentally tough team to win those games.
I'm not sure about West Virginia this year. I mean, they still have a few of those big athletic guys that will cause problems. And they still have Carter and they have Phillip. We're good guards. But I don't know.
He's one of those coaches, though. You just know he's going to get the most out of them. And they're going to run, 11, 12 guys at you during a game?
Yeah, and foul you the whole time, and only 20% can be called.
Yep.
And it's the biggest, like, farce in basketball. And it was, like, 5 or 8 years ago when Texas A&M women always played like that, and it just drove me crazy.
Yep.
And Huggins apparently has been doing it all along. I don't know. I'd never really noticed when I was younger.
I didn't notice it was Cincinnati either.
Or when he was at K-State, I didn't really think it was that bad.
Yeah.
But since he got to West Virginia, he's just like, every game's a bar fight, you know? And I don't know. So what do you guys think of the Big 12 are going to shake out?
I've been really impressed with Oklahoma State.
Yeah. Juwan Evans is a problem.
You and every other national basketball writer, that's all they want to talk about is Oklahoma State and Juwan Evans.
No, listen, to be fair, I said this on our
Thursday before everyone else
jumped on that train.
I'm just saying in general.
I mean, I was glad last year. Well, I wasn't glad. I mean, I don't want to get hurt. But it was. Yeah. My feelings weren't hurt that we didn't see him at all last year.
Did you see Doug Gottlieb's tweet yesterday? That he talked to a Big 12 coach. He said, Juwan Evans is by far the best Big 12 guard. Now, you can make an argument he's the best point guard, right? And it's an argument, right? But by far and away, and no one's even close, that's ridiculous.
Because you have him, you have Jordan Woodard, you have Frank Mason, you have some guy named Monte Morris, you have Jevon Carter at West Virginia. I mean,
they're good
guards. There's tiers to those. I think Morris and Mason and Evans are probably
the top
of the heap.
And even all three of those are a little bit different, right? Monte is more just under control, probably, you know, more assist guy.
Yeah, I'd say Evans is more the pure scorer.
Yeah, he's a
Mason
scoring.
Is the opposite. And I think Monte is kind of the guy in between those two that maybe doesn't do either of those things as well as those guys do, but he does both of them combined. Yeah. Well, yeah.
And his efficiency is probably going to be better in both of theirs, I would imagine.
Turnover-wise, yeah. I mean, I think Frank does pretty well with turnovers, but...
I mean, even the scoring, because Monte doesn't seem like he takes a lot of shots, but he gets his points too. He picks and chooses his spots pretty well.
Yeah, this year the game against Indiana, Mason seemed like he got like half of his points at the free throw line, because he does that super annoying thing when you drive to the rim and you just decide not to land on your feet, so then the refs call a foul.
Are you talking about like the Marcus Smart type deal thing too? What he used to do?
Yeah, similar, but yeah. I mean, no one's as bad as Marcus Smart. But, yeah, that seems a little exaggerated to call Juwan Evans by far. But yeah,
but he's definitely good.
It's Samantha. Yeah, he's really, really good. And, I mean, you figure last year their first option is now their third option with him and Forte back.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they're going to be a problem. I would expect to beat them at home. But, I mean, last year we
– I think it's going to be tough to go for anybody to go into Gallagher-Iba and win once Underwood gets that thing going again.
Well, and I was thinking about
good. I'm excited about that, because that has not been the job it should have been the last 5-10 years.
Yeah, and I was thinking about this with, you know, everyone's expecting Kansas to win the Big 12 again, I mean, including me. But one of the things I think it almost seems counterintuitive, and I could be off my rocker, but I think in order for Kansas to lose the league, you have to have a few teams that are good enough to beat them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, which doesn't necessarily make sense, because you're playing those teams too.
It can't just be one team that's good enough to beat them. It's got to be
several. Have to have some other teams help you out. Then you have to get lucky when you play like at those teams. Because the last few years, it seems like
if Iowa State
will beat them at home, and West Virginia will beat them at home, and then there'll be one or two other road games, and that's it. Like, people need to beat Kansas more, and then a couple other teams will have a chance to get to 14-4. I don't know. I could be wrong.
I mean, I'm just looking right now. I think TCU is going to end up being better than we thought. I mean, I'm not saying they're going to be great, but I think Jamie Dixon will have to be a better than we were expecting.
Jamie Dixon looks like a mob boss.
Of course he does. Yeah, he does. Oklahoma State will be better. Texas, I think, will be a little bit worse. I think we probably were talking them up a year too early, but they don't have a point guard.
Texas?
Yeah, Texas.
Yeah, I think they'll probably be like sixth or worse.
How much do you think Isaiah Taylor wishes he could come back now?
What's he doing?
That's exactly. I have no idea. I don't even know if he got. He left early for the draft. I don't think he got drafted.
To me, that Isaiah Taylor was always a player that was better than he ever showed. Like I watch him. His overall talent was unbelievable.
Those freaking floaters from 12 feet out just would drive you crazy. If he could ever make a jump shot, he would have been completely unstoppable.
And if he would have had guys around him, but
Well, I mean, he had some dudes, but I don't. Yeah, I think
Connor Lammert.
The staple Rick Barnes 6'10 white guy to stand in the corner and shoot threes that Naz Long was usually guarding. I think Texas will be worse. I think Kansas State will
be
bottom.
I think they'll be the last.
Tech, I'm unsure of. They've got a couple of grad transfers that are playing a lot that I just haven't seen them play. And I don't really know what to think of Chris Beard either. I mean, we saw him, but
I think he's going to be a good coach. I don't know if he's...
I think he's probably a good fit, at least.
Yeah, if nothing else... I mean, he's a Texas Tech guy. He was there for a while with Pat Knight and Bob Knight.
Right.
So he's a guy that knows that area, and I think that he could be pretty good.
Yeah, I think Oklahoma's probably... I think they're fourth or fifth, maybe.
Probably. I think they're middle.
I think it's us, West Virginia, and Baylor vying for number two.
There's nothing about Oklahoma... I was talking about this with C-Dub the other day. There's nothing about any player on that team that...
No,
scares me.
Not a single. Kadeem Latin's a good defender.
Yeah, Jordan Woodard is a good player, but I don't think he can be your best player. He can't be your best scorer, your guy that you rely on.
Last year, he was their third option on the perimeter. I mean, without Isaiah
Cousins
and Buddy Hield.
Yeah,
and I mean that Christian James kid they were thinking was going to be the Buddy Hield role.
Mm-hmm.
he's just not there yet.
Yeah,
and I mean, I don't know. We've obviously lost to UNI with good teams before, so there's no reason to crush them for that. But
it's not even about
that. I just don't think that they
Don't have a roster that's a
no. I agree with you.
That intimidating.
I think Baylor has one of the scarier rosters. Again,
just from a pure length standpoint,
Jonathan Motley
and talent overall. Yeah,
Jonathan Motley, he might be one of the best big men in the NBA in 5 years.
He's kind of like in that Miles Turner type.
Yeah.
type of player that where, yeah, you could see that because he has a little bit of range and he's athletic and can do some things on the block.
He's got some,
too.
Yeah, he's got some good moves on the block. Right. And he's just like, he's just a dude that it seems like he's just tenacious. You know, like
he's more active than Miles Turner.
Yeah. Like he just want, he's out there and he's like, that's my ball and I'm going to put it in the basket. I don't care what I have to do to do it, you know.
Yeah, Baylor I think is going to be okay cuz their point guard that they have that LeCompte or I don't know how you say it.
Yeah, I'm transferring at semester. Going to join the squad.
Manu LeCompte?
Yeah, him.
I look at West Virginia as like a team that's going to win. They'll win some games because of their style of play, like we said, but they'll also lose some just because and I said this, I think, when we were meeting with Neil Berry the other day, too. I just don't look at them as a team that's as talented as a lot of these other teams across the country, but, or across the Big 12, but they muddied it up where they win games. I think Oklahoma State beats teams the first go-around, and then they struggle the second part of the Big 12 season because I think even though they got Juwan Evans, I don't think they have enough other talent around there. Teams will figure out kind of what they need to do to stop them. I think they start hot and they fade at the end of the year.
Yeah, I'm not sure they have really anybody in the paint that can do anything. Like, Leighton Hammonds is there for his 17th year.
He's not still there, is he?
Yeah, I think so. Look, you got the computer.
I know. I'm looking at it right here.
I was thinking he was.
He is. Unbelievable. Yeah, Forte's obviously back. That's huge for them to get another shooter back there. But if you,
Carroll and Shine are they're solid players. Last year, those guys were having to be the top two options, and that just doesn't work.
They got that big stud freshman, didn't they? Like Lindy Waiters, wasn't he a big time recruit for them?
I told you I don't pay attention to recruiting.
So who do you get? How many teams is the Big 12 going to get in the tournament then?
Six.
Six.
Might do seven again.
I mean, it's tough to say because it depends on how big that divide is between like 7 and 8.
Yeah.
Well, let's count. Kansas, yes. West Virginia, yes. Baylor, Iowa State. So we got four there. Oklahoma?
I think they'll get
probably, it. Probably, yeah.
5. Texas Tech? No. Yes.
I think they sort of seemed like a lightning in a bottle team last year where they were able to win some games, and I don't know if that'll get duplicated this year.
I agree.
And it's hard. I was looking at some of their conference schedule or non-conference schedules this year. The other day, Texas is just like terrible. So we won't know anything about them until about second week of January.
You know, according to Ken Palm, their best non-conference game is, and they might be in a tournament here.
The one thing I don't like about Ken Palm and the schedule is
you can't see
the next games until after they happen.
Sure. But right now, according to what they have, Richmond at 99th is the best team that they play in the non-conference. That's not good.
Yeah. All their actual non-conference games are complete trash.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so back to your point. I mean, it's easier to count teams that won't get in, right? Like, TCU probably won't get in. Kansas State won't get in. We'll say Tech will not get in.
Texas and Oklahoma State.
But I think
Texas might just because they have a freaking Longhorn on their uniform.
And I was going to say, and I feel like all those others, I think those other seven, there's a better case to be made for why they could get in than there is for why they won't.
Yeah.
I think that's true. Because the Big 12 is still at a point reputation-wise where if you're 9-9 in the league – you'll have a really good chance.
Yeah.
And if you're 8-10, you're not eliminated.
I think it's funny how some people are like, the Big 12 is down this year. It's like, okay, by what measurement?
Right.
You know, like, yeah, sure, they lost Buddy Hield, you lose Perry Ellis, you lose George Niang, but there's still some teams that are really going to be really good on the national scale.
So, like, the way Ken Pom essentially does his conference ranking is it's essentially an average. So, not necessarily the average team, but an average of all of them. So I think last year you had three borderline elite teams with Kansas, Oklahoma, and Iowa State. Iowa State less so once the season got further along. But you also had TCU that was a steaming pile.
Mm-hmm.
Oklahoma State turned into a steaming pile. Kansas State wasn't much better. This year I think you have Kansas, which I think is top 5, but I don't think I think the bottom of the league is a lot better.
Yeah.
And your middle is even probably a little better. So like on his rankings for conferences, Big 12 will probably be in about the same place as it was last year.
Just looking at, I'm going to make a case for Texas right now. I'm looking at their schedule. Long Beach State and Kent State are their only poor games the rest of the year, according to Ken Palm here. The only two games that are
They go to like Michigan?
They go to Michigan. They play Alabama. Even UT Arlington's a good team this year. UT Arlington, they're pretty solid. They play Georgia.
Ken Pom's telling you that. Just remember that when you say you don't like Ken Pom.
No, I actually pay attention. Like I said, I've been known to place a wager a time or two in my life. UT Arlington, they're solid. Here's my question to you, though. Iowa State now, are they better than they were last year?
Well, what's your definition of better?
Are they better? Do they win more?
Do I think they're a better team, or
do you think they have potential to be better? Do you think this team?
I think we'll win more than 10 conference games. Yeah.
Do you think that's more because of the system, or because it's Steve Prohm's second year and he's kind of got his system in place as far as how he's coaching?
I guess I don't know what I would necessarily attribute it to. I think I've actually heard you guys talk about it on your podcast and whatnot.
Thanks for listening.
Yep, you're welcome. The makeup of the team is I don't know if it's necessarily better, but it's always the makeup of a team that I personally prefer, having a smaller, guard-oriented, quicker team. I think your options are a lot more wide open, usually. I know we won't have a problem scoring. I mean, defensively, I feel like early on, like they're buying in more than they did last year. But I also vividly remember saying that after the Colorado game last year, where everyone said, if we weren't playing defense, we wouldn't have won. We shot so bad. Well, then later on, you know, the defense kind of went to crap. But I think as long as the defense progresses to the point where they do a better job with giving up the layups and continuing to contest shots where they usually have so far this year, I think that will help.
So where is the defense traditionally ranked during Fred Hoiberg's time and then last year for Steve Prohm as far as national ranks, and according to Ken Pom?
I think last year it's been around 70 to 100.
So
the one year for Hoiberg, it was a lot better. It was the Royce year. It was like 50. But if you
Which
look
is where
at
where they're at right now, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, you gotta let that flesh out a little bit. Sure. The Royce White year, it was like in the 50s. But the thing about that was opponent 3-point percentage was like way down. So depending on how you feel about opponent 3-point percentage.
Don't get me going on this right now.
Well, we can talk about it if you want to talk about it.
No, I don't want to talk about it.
We're already at 55 minutes, so don't have too long of a rant. Yeah.
So for Iowa State to really, you know, get over the next, you know, hurdle, right, or go to the Sweet 16 and go even beyond there, we're thinking they probably got to have the defensive efficiency because they're going to score, right? Their offense is going to be great.
I imagine they'll be top 20 offense fairly comfortably.
Defense has got to be top 50. You agree with that?
Yeah, if it's top 50, I mean.
Then you're looking at a team that's got a really good chance of competing in the Big 12.
I haven't looked at this for a while, but there's a stat out there for a long time with – Final Four teams being at least top 20 in teams that won being top 20 in both adjusted offense and defense from Pomeroy. If you're a team that has a top 20 offense and a top 50 defense, that's a profile that will get you a long ways in the tournament typically. There's not many teams. I mean, there's a maximum of 20 that can be top 20 offense and top 50 defense.
Mm-hmm.
There's not many teams that are top 20 in both. I mean, it's less than 3 or 4 by the time you're in March.
Usually it's like Virginia or Wisconsin.
Yeah, I mean, teams like Kansas is always like top 10 in both, stuff like that. And Duke's usually really high in offense and just not as bad as us in defense.
People always rip on the Virginias and Wisconsin's because they don't score more points, but their efficiency is usually off the charts, correct?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a matter of they're playing 60 possession games instead of 75 possession games. But yeah, some people struggle with math and dividing. I had a funny one in my time hop today with an argument from last year on that. So different story, different day.
Yeah. All right. Are you guys good?
Thanks to Kirk for swinging in here.
Yeah, thanks, Kirk.
Anytime I can make it work out, we can give it a shot again.
Hopefully, next time you come on here, we'll bring you on maybe later on the season. We're talking about Iowa State just killing all these rankings, and that's why they're having all the success and why they're on their way to a one seed.
I mean, figure we go 2-1 in Florida next week. We get Cincinnati at home. Then you go to Iowa and – say we get out of all that with one loss going into league play, we think we'll be sitting pretty good.
So we've gone 3 podcasts now. I haven't mentioned it. We're doing a bus trip to Iowa City.
Yeah.
So I got a bunch of tickets for Fanatic, and we'll have a bus. We'll all sit together. $80. Leaving 3:30, 4 o'clock.
Sounds like a heck of a deal.
Why are you not going on it bringing your girls?
Why am I not bringing my girls?
Yeah.
That's an entirely separate reason. I'm sure I'll be coaching 2 basketball practices probably that night by then anyway. So
you mean you don't? I thought.
Can I be your assistant coach?
State.
Not that again.
I thought that was a state holiday, the Cy Hawk game. Meaning there should not be practices. You should be off that night for the game. Doesn't work out that way.
No.
What do you do? It's pretty serious.
No, he's a coach that wants to win.
Do you DVR the game then and just turn off your phone and everything and get home?
No, I'm more the type that will cancel practice and watch on TV.
You are that guy.
Yeah. I'll rearrange other people's schedules for my personal wants and needs.
I mean, if it was Iowa State, Savannah State, that's different.
Oh, yeah.
But no, Iowa State, Iowa, sure.
Yeah. Well, and I just assume everybody else would rather be watching the game too, right? So
Yeah.
Who am I to limit them from watching a basketball game that they want to watch?
What are we doing two nights after that, too? Aren't we doing something on the 10th?
Oh, we're doing a Toys for Tots. I don't know if we have any details on that yet, though.
Oh, yeah.
C-Dub tweeted about it yesterday.
Did he?
So, yeah.
That's good to know. Yeah, we're doing a Cyclone Fanatic Toys for Tots at Twisted Vine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're involving that other site?
Hawkeye Nation. We're going to do a contest. Cyclone Fanatic versus Hawkeye Nation. See who can raise more toys for some children.
Well, we'll
win.
You said if there's a competition and it's Iowa State versus somebody else, we probably already won.
Yeah. I need analytics on what we need to do to win this Toys for Tots breakdown.
You have to send everyone to Walmart when toys are on sale so they can buy more than one is what you need. You need to analyze the sales and trends.
Will you please find the coupons for us?
My wife will. She's a coupon clipper.
Is she?
Oh, heck yeah.
Gosh, I wish your wife was... Have your wife call my wife.
I doubt she has her phone number. Well, but
I'll give it to you. This is what we need to have happen.
Cool. All right.
Sorry about that.
Hope everybody has a great Thanksgiving. Hope this was good for your drive to wherever you're trying to go. For Adam and Kirk, I'm Jared. Thanks for listening.